tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 13th of July, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, it's really hot over here in Britain at the moment. I have a fan going. I hope it's not too intrusive on the audio recording of this podcast. And today I do actually want to talk about Britain mainly. And I want to talk about national identity, particularly British national identity. And the article that we're going to use for our notes comes from Breitbart, and the headline is "Majority of Britons Fear Diversity Destroying National Identity. 4 in 10 say Muslims cannot integrate." Of course, diversity just means less white people. So, of course, less white people is going to destroy the national identity of a white nation. Well, let's have a look at what the survey results are. A majority of Britons believe that their national identity is being diminished, while many believe that certain groups, such as Muslims, will not be able to integrate into British society. Well, that's not really going to be any surprise, is it? Because they're not even closely related to us. I mean, the British nations, the Welsh, the Northern Irish, the Scots, and the English, they're all very, very closely related. They came about over time, and they're very closely related to other European nations that are all white. So they're essentially all brothers. When you look at Muslims, they're non-white. They don't come from Europe. They're not European. They might have some European DNA mixed in there, but they also have other DNA which is nothing to do with the DNA that is found in the British. They have DNA such as sub-Saharan African in there, which is why they're a lot of them are Arabs. If they come from Pakistan, they have Dravidian DNA in there. And all of these other races are completely different to the white race, and Britons, the British nations, are a part of the white race. So you're not going to be able to integrate people from other racial groups, are you? Because they're not part of the same group in the first place. It would be rather like trying to graft an orange branch onto an apple tree. It's just not possible. It's not going to be able to be integrated. And I think a large portion of the British people understand that. And that's why they say that Muslims will not be able to integrate into British society. A survey from the More in Common polling firm found that 55% of the British public believe that their country's national identity is disappearing due to the artificial diversity imposed by the mass migration agenda favoured by the political establishment. So that's the majority. A majority of the British people are concerned that they're losing their national identity. Well, where does national identity come from in the first place? Well, if you look at the word nation, it comes from the word natal. It's a Latin word, and natal means birth. So essentially, a nation are a group of people, that are united in their birth, i.e. their ancestry. They all share the same birth mothers, essentially, going all the way back. They're part of a large extended family. And indeed, if you do DNA checks on the British people, you will find out that they are essentially cousins to one another. And If you compare them to groups which are very, very different to them, such as sub-Saharan Africans, for instance, they are the equivalent of second or third cousins, I believe. If you compare them to groups which are closer groups, like the Danish, then they're still cousins, but much further removed. So essentially, a nation is an extended family. So what is the national identity? Well, it is the family identity. And that is what is disappearing. When you import other ethnic groups into your society, and especially when you then tell them that they are the same as the original national group, that, of course, is going to destroy your identity, isn't it? It's effectively erasing British identity and saying that it doesn't exist. Now, effectively, what they do, when we get these other groups in society, they give them citizenship and they give them a passport which says that they are a UK citizen. And then the mainstream media and the politicians refer to them as British. But they don't actually mean that they are British people. What they mean is they are British citizens because they have a British passport. But they're not actually British. And they've used this to try to claim that people that are completely different to us are just as British as somebody whose ancestors have lived here for 1,000 years. Recently, some of the mainstream media have been referring to people as a British citizen who was born in Somalia, for instance, instead of saying a British national who was born in Somalia. Effectively, they're a British citizen. They can't be a British national because they're not a part of the British nation. They're not related to the British nation by birth. They bear no relation to the British nation, in fact. All they happen to have done is perhaps they might have been born on British soil. If you're born on British soil, it doesn't change who your ancestors were, does it? It doesn't actually change what you are. What you are remains a constant, whether it was your parents or your grandparents or your great-grandparents. Essentially, they're all the same. They could all be born on different continents entirely, but they would still be the same people. So this idea that anybody that is born in another country then becomes that ethnicity is false. And it's a way of attacking British identity. It negates British identity, essentially, and says that there's no such thing as British identity. The poll further found that 42% of voters do not believe that Muslims can be integrated into British society. This sentiment was most pronounced among supporters of Nigel Farage's Reform UK party at 71%, the left-wing Guardian newspaper reported. And of course, civic nationalists latch onto this and they say, oh, the problem with immigration is that these people don't integrate. If only we could get them to integrate. Well, as I pointed out, you can't actually get them to integrate. And the mainstream media do not want us to be forming alliances with any of these groups. But I would have thought that Muslims would be the most likely group that we could find allies amongst, because they are extremely traditionalist. They're anti-feminism. They're anti the LGBTQ agenda being taught to children. They're anti-abortion. And they understand that members of one ethnic group wish to be surrounded by other members of that ethnic group. They understand very well, because Muslims like to live around other Muslims. And all we're saying as nationalists is that as ethno-nationalists, we would rather be around other people of our own ethnic group. And Muslims completely understand that. In fact, the only disagreement that we might have with Muslims is on immigration. I mean, we would rather that we didn't have Muslims immigrating here. Of course, they would rather that more Muslims immigrated there, or in some cases, perhaps they don't. Perhaps they would rather just have the Muslims that are there around them, because they understand that the more people that come into the country, the more strain there is put on things such as hospitals and schools, and the less likely it is that these Muslims are going to be able to get into the schools that they want to get into, or then less likely to be seen at the hospitals. So it might even be that some of these Muslims are anti-immigration, and you would think that we could possibly form an alliance with these groups. And of course, the mainstream media and the left definitely don't want that. So they push this idea that, oh, if only groups could be integrated and Muslims can't be integrated, therefore we should be against these Muslims, we should be trying to integrate them. And of course, trying to change them and force them to give up their traditionalist ways is just going to make us appear like enemies to them. And as I say, I don't think we are enemies to them. We're enemies of the grooming gangs, which, of course, is a predominantly Muslim phenomenon. But you will find, upon talking to Muslims, that they don't support rapists. They don't support pedophilia. I mean, I discovered this when I was in prison. There's total condemnation of these rape gangs, essentially. And, of course, they were kept apart from the other prisoners. And if they had been found by any of these other prisoners, then, you know, they could very well have lost their lives. So I think part of this saying that Muslims can't be integrated is a way of rubbing them up the wrong way, basically, trying to get civic nationalists to say that this is the problem. If only we could integrate them, everything would be fine. As an ethno-nationalist, I don't want them to lose their traditions and become integrated. I want them to keep their traditions. I like the diversity in the world between the different ethnic groups, and I want to keep it that way. I don't want everybody to turn into a mindless consumer, which is essentially what they mean by integrated. Additionally, 31% of respondents said that they were open to the notion that non-white people could never be as British as the native white population, while 33% said they favoured remigration. Well, this first point I've already covered. I mean, they can't be British, can they? They can be British citizens, but they can't actually be British people. They can't be a part of the British people. And that's what it means here. Can never be as British as the native white population. Well, you're either British or you're not. And that is dependent upon your ancestors. Of course, people on the left will say, ah, yes, but the British are made up of all these different groups, Romans, Belgae, Saxons, Cymry. All of those groups, though, were brother nations. I mean, if you look in history, you trace the history back, the Saxons and the Cymry, that's the main groups that make up Britain, are the Anglo-Saxons and the Welsh. They both go back to a group of people that were around the Persian area, up above the Assyrian Empire, around about 600 BC. And then they made their way into Europe. Some of them went east, some of them went west. The ones that went east gave us the Buddha. And they went to India and Thailand, places like that. And the western ones, the Cymry, made their way into Europe first. And they were known as the Cymrians, essentially. They made their way into Wales, became the Cymry, became the Welsh. Following them became the Scythians, and they became known as the Saxons and the Germans. Essentially, they were originally the same people. If you look at the Romans, they go back to the Trojans. And if we look at our legendary history of Britain, where do we get the name Britain from? We get it from Brutus. Brutus was a Trojan prince. So essentially the Romans, the Saxons, the Welsh, they were all part of the same group originally. And the same goes for other parts of Europe. I mean, these Cymry, they became the Danes as well. And then you've got the Vikings and the Norse. They all go back to the same groups. This is why you get people like Tom Rousel is surprised when he discovers that there is essentially quote-unquote British DNA in Vikings from Denmark, going back to about 200 BC. And essentially, this is before the Viking invasion of Britain. So how did they have this British DNA? Well, essentially, they had that British DNA because they were all originally part of the same group before they even went into Britain. In fact, many centuries before that. So the British nations are made up of very, very closely related brother nations in the first place. So it's not like the people that came to Britain were from entirely different racial groups, which they are today. So this argument that the British people are made up of different groups, they're essentially a mongrel nation, it's nonsense, because they're made up of brother nations. Now, the second part of this is saying that 33% said that they favoured remigration. Now, this is good, because remigration is a term that's been pushed by populists, ethno-nationalists and civic nationalists, and it's now made its way into the general vernacular. And part of that, I guess, is Donald Trump talked about reverse migration, which is basically what remigration is. So this term is now a recognised term, and it is being being used, and 33% of people say that they favour this, whatever it means. I mean, does it mean all the migrants go back, or does it mean they're encouraged to go back? Well, Patriotic Alternatives say that ideally we would have a country that remains 95% ethnically British, and it could be 5% non-ethnically British. And I think this is probably what countries used to be like in the past, because capital cities would always have different ethnic groups there because of the traders and the merchants. And you would always have a Chinatown, for instance, but that wouldn't take place outside of the major capital city and the ports. And it was there as a function of trade, essentially. It wasn't there as a function of replacing the original group with a secondary group. So the fact that a third of the population say that they favour remigration, this is certainly good. And I think more than that say that they want to stop to immigration. I think that's something like 70% of the general public want to see migration limited. And you could probably say again that a lot of non-whites probably also would like to see migration limited, especially ones that have been here ever since the Second World War, whose families have been here ever since the Second World War, and they're now finding it difficult to get housing and all the rest of it. And they're seeing that people that have broken into the country are being put up in hotels. I mean, that's one of the main reasons why people are against immigration, is because of the pressure that it puts on all the other services. And the pressure that's put on other services is going to affect every British citizen, whether they're ethnically British or not. This came in contrast to opinions from Muslims in Britain, 85% of whom stated they were in favour of integrating into British society, and 88% who said that they mixed well with people of other faiths. Now, this is interesting, because do they really understand what it means to say they are in favour of integrating into British society? I don't think they look at that and say, well, integrating into British society means that we don't wear burqas anymore, we don't have a call to prayer, we don't go to the mosque anymore, we don't pray five times a day, we start drinking alcohol. I mean, that's not what they mean there. When it says there about integrating into British society, they probably see themselves as already being integrated, even though they're actually very different. And the 88% of whom say that they mixed well with people of other faiths, I mean, they probably do. As I say, I got on well with the Muslims when I was in prison. There is this idea from Catholicism that Judaism, Muslim and Christianity are all sort of brothers with the same God. That's not actually borne out by scripture at all. And of course, as an identity Christian, I do not go along with that. But the identity Christians are a tiny minority amongst the Christian faith. Generally, amongst the larger faiths, they would say, well, yes, we get on with Muslims, we get on with Christians, we get on with Jews. And we often see on the television, you will see Muslim Jews and Christians standing together in the face of the latest atrocity. So that's probably correct, that they do mix well with people of other faiths. They may not do in Muslim countries. You may find that Christians in particular are persecuted in Muslim countries, but we're not talking about Muslim countries, we're talking about in Britain at the moment. However, perhaps undermining such claims, 64% of Muslims in Britain also said they believed that the white British population was working against Muslims. Well, I can understand why they would think that, because you do see a lot of sort of anti-Islam propaganda. But is that really working against Muslims? It's more a question of preserving British identity, I think, rather than working against Muslims. I don't think people are thinking, I really dislike these Muslims, I'm going to do what I can to go against the Muslims. I think people think, well, I'm very concerned that my identity is being chipped away, and part of the reason why that's being chipped away is because we have these other groups that are so different to us. And one of the groups that are most visually different to us and have the most different customs are Muslims. So it's not specifically going against Muslims, it's specifically wanting to preserve British identity, which is what this survey was about. Significantly, this was a larger portion of the Muslim population than those who said the Jewish people are working against Muslims, at 56%. And again, that's, I would say that's correct. If you look throughout history, Jews and Muslims in particular have worked together. If you look at the Jewish Golden Age, look it up on Wikipedia, it will tell you that the Jewish Golden Age was in Spain when it was under Muslim occupation, because the Jews were given these high positions throughout society. And the only reason why they have a problem today is because of Israel in the Middle East. Up until then, Jews and Muslims really got on quite well together under Muslim-occupied countries. It's just that there's this Israel and Palestine thing now, which causes problems between them. So it doesn't surprise me that they see that the indigenous British are more working against them than the Jews. And of course, you also have Jews working with Muslims on the definition of Islamophobia and all this sort of thing. You have this organisation called Tel Mama, which is the same as the Jewish organisations that are against anti-Semitism. But it was, I think it was started up by a rabbi. It was started up by Jews. It's a Jewish and Muslim organisation. And that's the main Muslim organisation that looks at Islamophobia. Now, we have organisations against anti-Semitism. We have organisations against Islamophobia. And as soon as somebody says, well, I want to speak up against people that are being anti-white, they're accused of being racist, aren't they? The only organisation that really does that is Patriotic Alternative. And look at the way that they are attacked for doing that. And what does it tell us? Well, it really tells us that if you have multiculturalism, it can't work, because the white people will see the Muslims as working against them. The Muslims will see the white people as working against them. The Jews will see everybody else as working against them. Now, if we had homogenous nations, if we had countries with only one ethnic group within them, that wouldn't be possible to happen, would it? You wouldn't think that there were other ethnic groups working against your interests, because there wouldn't be these other ethnic groups there. I mean, I recently had a conversation on Twitter, basically showing that white people were not racist a couple of hundred years ago, 300 years ago. In fact, they were the complete opposite of that. And I was saying, look, this just shows you, when you have a homogenous country, the default position for white people is sympathy. That's the default position, not racism. And then when you enforce multiculturalism upon them and you force other racial groups there, that's what gives the chance for racism to arise, because you see these different people there that are consuming your resources, that are essentially trying to get whatever they can for their own group in competition with your group. So essentially they're moving in other people to compete against the original nation. And of course, that is going to inspire resentment among the original nation that their government have brought in these competitors. And it's very easy to blame the competitors for this. And we're encouraged to do this. We're told that this is what nationalists do. They blame these other immigrants. Of course, we don't. We blame the government for making these policies. And that's where racism arrives from. If you don't have other racial groups in your country, the default position is sympathy. It's multiculturalism that causes these problems. The survey, which polled 4,094 adults in Britain as a part of an upcoming report for the UK Extremism and Democratic Resilience Centre, also found that 61% saw the social contract between British institutions and the public had broken down. And again, that's as a result of multiculturalism. Because trying to enforce multiculturalism in ways to try and enforce an equality that is completely unnatural, institutions such as the police have been told that they should treat different racial groups differently. In essence, they're favouring these other racial groups rather than the indigenous British. And of course, the British people are going to see that as the social contract not just breaking down, but being completely destroyed. The poll also found that although 80% said that political violence was never acceptable, 29% of 18 to 34-year-olds considered it acceptable. And that's quite shocking, because essentially what they're saying there is they support terrorism. 18 to 34-year-olds, a third of them, support terrorism. I mean, what a state of affairs that we're in our country. It's so serious that a third of the young people support terrorism, and the government, in response to that, doesn't actually address the concerns which have caused people to think like this. They just try to silence people from voicing concern about these issues. They try to lock up, basically, the people complaining about the problems caused by multiculturalism. Meanwhile, over one in four, 28%, said they would be fine with politicians they backed breaking the rules to achieve their political aims. Again, so there's no respect for the law here. There's no real understanding of it. I mean, you don't need to break the rules. If you're a politician and you're in power, all you have to do is modify them. I mean, that's the whole point of having a government, is that they can create new laws and they can modify existing ones. So they wouldn't have to break any rules by definition, because they would be politicians. So, I mean, what that really shows is a dumbing down of the public, really. If 25% of people think that they, you know, politicians would need to break the rules to achieve their political aims, then that shows that they don't really understand what a politician's role is. One of the co-authors of the report, Britain Under Strain, The Broken Social Contract, Democratic Distrust and the Mainstreaming of Extremism, former Counter-Extremism Commissioner Sarah Khan, said that the window to reverse course on the breakdown in trust was vanishingly small. And that's interesting because, I mean, this survey basically, it confirms things that we say as nationalists, but the commissioner or the co-author of the report is Sarah Khan, who wanted to ban patriotic alternatives. She wanted to come out with this phrase, legal but harmful, for content that was entirely legal, but that somebody decides they don't want the public to hear, so they then describe it as harmful, so it can then be banned. So she is certainly not right-wing or nationalist-minded at all. The incoming Prime Minister must address these issues before our social contract anxieties shred away our democratic values, she said. The challenge now facing us is more serious and more deeply rooted than when I was Counter-Extremism Commissioner. This is not a passing dip in confidence, but a structural crisis as a result of a chronic erosion of trust in institutions. And I would agree with all of that. And in fact, this is what nationalists have been warning about for years now, is that this is what's happening. And yet every time people point that out, the government then get angry at them and try to lock them up in prison for pointing it out, for warning people. And they say, oh, you're just trying to cause problems. You're just trying to cause division. Well, no, the division was caused by the government when it imported people that were radically different from the indigenous population. That's what caused the division, not people pointing out the problems that have been caused by multiculturalism online. Yet it appears that the incoming government, which is reportedly set to be staffed by pro-censorship activists, will likely attempt to further clamp down on what is said on the internet and social media, rather than addressing the core issues driving the breakdown in trust, such as the issue of immigration. And in actual fact, they even tried to ban people criticising immigration at all. I mean, that was part of the United Nations Global Compact on Immigration that Theresa May signed us up to in Britain some years ago when she was Prime Minister. And part of that was they were going to add a new definition to hate crime laws of immigration. They were going to say that immigration status is a protected characteristic, therefore you cannot say anything negative about immigration. And this is the way that they deal with these things. They just ban you from talking about them rather than addressing the problems, rather than pouring water on the fire. They just say, well, don't tell anybody that the place is burning down and then it will be all right. I mean, you can see the problem with that, can't you? Critics have warned that the failure of numerous governments in recent decades to meaningfully deliver on their promises to significantly cut immigration has fundamentally undermined faith in the democratic process to deliver. Probably the most egregious example of that was Boris Johnson and his promise to cut immigration, and he let something like 1.3 million people get into the country. Net immigration, I think that was, it was something like 0.7 million. Gross immigration was 1.3 million, and I think net was something like 0.7 million. And this is after promising to cut immigration. I mean, the Conservatives continually promised to cut immigration, and every time they were voted in, there was a massive increase in immigration. Again, this is the sort of thing that breaks the social contract and undermines the democratic process. And that's why so many people no longer vote, because they don't think that it makes any difference. Professor David Betts of the Department of War Studies at King's College London has warned that Britain is likely already over the tipping point for a civil war breaking out, which he has attributed in large part to the multiculturalism imposed on the country and the unwillingness or the inability of the political establishment to reverse such trends. Of course, he's not very likely to be arrested for hate speech for that, but over the years, if people pointed out that we had a race war coming, they could be sent to jail. In fact, that's what they, one of the reasons why they sent me to jail, was talking about a quote-unquote race war. But essentially, that's what is being meant here when he talks about a civil war. He's talking about these different ethnic groups within the country going to war against one another. I mean, I certainly hope that that does not happen. But we need to see the government making changes if we want to prevent something like that happening. And I mean, it's not me saying this, it's Professor David Betts of the Department of War Studies at King's College London. He's the one that is warning Britain is likely already over the tipping point for a civil war. So he's saying it is highly likely that there will be a civil war, and it's already too far gone. Will the government pay any attention to that? Well, of course, if it was somebody like me that was saying that, they would be trying to put me in prison for pointing it out. They'd say that I'm trying to make it happen. As if by warning about something that might happen in the future, you're deliberately trying to make it happen when you're quite obviously trying to prevent it from happening. I mean, we don't want these problems to occur. We want there to be peaceful remigration. We want there to be a voluntary remigration. Encouraged with financial incentives and making the country equal. By making the country equal, I mean making it so that everybody has to speak English, and you're not going to have an interpreter paid for by the government if you don't speak English. Get rid of these laws, which mean that you get punished more for things if you're a white person. So get rid of all these aggravated by race. Get rid of those provisions in law. Get rid of the Public Order Act, which makes it difficult for people to talk about these problems and gives extra protections to these other ethnic groups. I mean, all of these things mean that we're no longer equal under the law. So if you just made everybody equal under the law and made it so that you don't get paid for interpreters if you don't speak English, so everybody's equal, everything's written in English. And if you then offered financial incentives for people to go back to their ancestral homelands, I think you would see a large portion of the newcomers to the country going back. So, I mean, it's not as if this isn't a problem that can be solved peacefully. But if it isn't solved peacefully and the government keep locking people up for pointing it out, then as Professor David Betts says, it is likely that a civil war may break out. Well, let's hope it doesn't break out. Anyway, that's an interesting survey there. We might talk some more about this later in the week. But thank you very much for listening. And I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.